This is a production of Cornell University.
Okay.
So, do you want, Alexa, do you want me to share my voting list, or do you have access to that?
I have my own list.
Okay, cool.
One second. Okay, so I'll start the arts and humanities. That would be Rebecca. Okay, and Paul?
I'm here.
Hi, and then the life sciences would be Leo, who I saw. Ariel's here, and then Maddie. I don't think I saw her. Okay. Then physical sciences will be Doa, which I see. Cody. Also think Cody's here.
Yeah, I'm here.
Yeah. Casey, I believe, is also here.
Yep, I'm here.
Nathan, yes, right?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay. And then social sciences, Michael Daly. Megan Gelsinger.
I'm here.
Megan Sawi.
I'm here.
Jeremy Falk.
Here.
Okay. And then for the professional schools, there's Matt.
Yeah, I'm here.
Emery.
Oh, yeah.
Here. Let's see. I think that's it for this, for Johnson.
Heidi and Matthew Sturgeon.
Yeah, I don't think either of them are here.
No? Okay.
And then for the law students, it would be Ryan Maloney and Marvin. Is Marvin on?
I don't think he can make it.
Okay. And then Mila's here. Peyton and Peyton and Allison are also here from the vet school. And then Everett. Ethan. And Catherine's not going to be here. So that's it.
Okay. Thank you very much. We do have quorum, so that's a good sign. So we have a presentation from the census, but I'm not sure if they're here, from Kate Suffren. Kate, are you here?
It doesn't look like she's on.
No? Okay. Next we have, well, we'll go ahead and do the Q&A with Dinuth. Dinuth, would that be okay with you?
Yes, can you hear me now?
Okay. Yes.
Yeah, it would be helpful for me if you don't have the slides up so that I can see people. When the slides go up, that most of the people go away.
Okay, are the slides should be gone by now, is that correct?
Yes.
Okay, and before I give you the floor, Dinuth, I'd like to remind everyone that Dinuth will be able to answer questions that pertain to the graduate school. So if you have a question that's within the realms of the professional schools, she might be able to direct you to them. So this is in case any of you have any questions based off of the guidelines and policies that the university has implemented. And the way that we'll do this is, if you have any questions, please raise your hand, your virtual hand. And you can do that by clicking participants towards the bottom of the screen. And there's a blue raise hand symbol. And you click on it, and then Alexa will acknowledge you and verbally call your name. And when she does that, you can ask a question. After you ask the question, we suggest that you click on the hand again to lower your hand. If you can't find the hand symbol, let us know in the chat. Okay, so I'll go ahead and give you the floor, Dinuth, if you have a prelude or anything that you wanted to say before we open it up to our Q&A.
Sure, thank you. And thanks for this opportunity to talk with all of you. First, I wanted to say thank you to the GPSA for contributing to the Access Fund that's being administered through the Dean of Students. That's terrific. I don't know if you've gotten an update from them, but with your $50,000, they're well above that now in terms of requests that they've had. The last that I heard was this morning. I'm sure more have come in. Morning, that requests were about 110,000 so far. The graduate school has committed another 52,000 from our resources. We have a query out to all of the professional schools, so College of Veterinary Medicine, Law, Johnson Graduate School of Management, College of Engineering for MN, you know, because they have the MN professional. School of Hotel Administration, because MMH is there, and Architecture, because the MR is there. Most of the other professional degrees are in the graduate school. So we are waiting to hear from them if they are going to put any additional resources into the Access Fund. They may decide that they're just administering the emergency funds directly through their schools to their students. But Dean Pettacore's desire was to have a kind of one-stop shopping arrangement and therefore try to funnel all funds into the Access Fund. So we haven't heard back that I know yet, Jason Kahup was handling this part, from all of those professional schools. But we have given additional money to the Access Fund and we're looking for more. So we hope to add more to that. And particularly my concern is that while I don't know what kind of graduate professional students are already among the ones, like 200 of them who have put in requests, my guess is that may be more heavily professional degree students, since they received the word earlier on to leave campus. And for research degree students, the word has gone out about, you know, with a kind of a leading message much more recently, and they have, you know, time now that they're really focusing on getting their lab and their scholarship and research stuff in order to be able to work remotely. So we want to make sure to reserve some funds, or we're looking for extra funds, I will say, so that they'd be available for later applicants, which may be research degree students, we don't know. So again, thank you for doing that. And just a comment that we appreciate everybody's flexibility and understanding in this. These are rapidly changing conditions. You know, if you're following the news, you're seeing cities that are you know, closing bars, closing restaurants, closing gatherings. San Francisco, I just saw, imposed, you know, kind of lockdown requirements on the city. So, you know, rapidly changing scenario. Appreciate your flexibility. We've been trying to get messages out to graduate and professional students as soon as we can, you know, as soon as the university makes decisions that that affect graduate and professional students. We're trying to keep our COVID-19 website updated for the graduate school, as well as refer you back to the university COVID-19 website. So I'm happy now to take your questions. I will give a caveat that that I will do my best to answer them. Jan, who is on this, usually takes copious notes when we're in these situations. So I'm pretty sure she's doing that now. And we will try to follow up as needed on things that that we're not able to address now. So, Andy, I'll turn it over to you to get questions.
Thank you very much, Dinuth. So now, if you have a question for Dinuth, raise your virtual hand. And again, if you can't find that, let us know in the chat, and we'll try to figure it out. And Alexa will verbally call on you to ask your question. Okay. So I'll turn it over to Alexa.
Okay, so the only person I see right now is Anthony Poon. So Anthony, you have the floor.
Hi, I'm Anthony. Thank you for your summary. I just had a question. Is there any information you could share with us about how the Access Fund has been used? How much has been dispersed to handle COVID-19 related needs?
Yeah, thank you, Anthony. My understanding is that all of the Access Fund monies for graduate and professional students are only for COVID-19. My understanding that is that the Access Fund was created with dollars, I think, from a donor and alum targeted to undergraduate students. So it was the additional money from GPSA and now from the graduate school that's allowing that to be available to graduate professional students, but it's only targeted to COVID-19. I hope that helps.
Do you know, like, the question is basically, like, we're putting this money in. I want to make sure, like, we are quickly giving it to people who actually need it. So, like, do we know how quickly we are, how much of the 50,000 or whatever has been dispensed so far?
I don't know the details because it's the Dean of Students Office that is administering it. But when I talked with the Jay this morning, I believe he mentioned that there are nine staff who, like, full time are tackling the requests that are coming in, and they're trying to handle them as soon as they can. Part of it is that they all then are working on helping the students make travel arrangements. So my understanding is that they're, like, you know, full bore, just trying to get needs met. But I don't have more details than that.
All right, thank you.
Okay, the next question is from Kavya.
Hi, thanks a lot for this. I guess my question is in two parts. One, you mentioned that the requests have already more than the money that's actually there. So I guess, do you have an idea of how they're making these judgment calls on who gets the money and who doesn't? And the second part of that was specifically for international students. I mean, it's all well to say you should probably head home, but a home ticket to home can easily be $1,500 right now. So what does that mean, I guess, for international students who want to access the fund?
So my understanding, Kavya, is that with the additional funds that the graduate school was able to supplement the Access Fund with, that would meet all of the dollar values that were requested as of this morning. But again, I'm sure there are more coming in. That's why we're waiting to see what the professional schools will give. And I really can't give you any details on how the breakdown is or, you know, what the awards are per person. I mean, I just don't remember what the Access Fund said in terms of instructions, in terms of limits per award, if there were any, or how Dean of Students is prioritizing those. So maybe Andy could follow up with the Jay, but I would just caution that, the Jay is really flat out right now. So unless it's really critical for some reason for you to have that information quickly, you might just trust the best that they can and then seek a report in a little while, not pressing him right away.
I believe the limit is $500. Yeah, I'm getting some head shaking. Okay, the next person I have is Casey.
Yeah. Hi. So I met with a couple people from my department this morning, and they had some questions that they wanted me to ask. So I'll ask the two of them. First, what support will Cornell provide to people being quarantined? And the second one is, how will vacation be handled?
I'm not sure what kind of support you mean for people who will be quarantined. Certainly, if you're looking for Cornell Health support, that's a question that Cornell Health would have to address. There's not somebody, to my knowledge, you can, like, go out and buy groceries for them. So that's part of the challenge of staying locally. you know, we'll try to look into that with Cornell Health to see if there's any provisions that are being made. I haven't seen any discussion of that particular piece yet. I'm not quite sure what the vacation question was. If you need to self-isolate for COVID-19 reasons or quarantine for COVID-19 reasons, it's not vacation. And that I thought was pretty clear in the messages that have gone out to date. Vacation, you know, stands as it is that, you know, the expectation is that, you know, yes, we understand that there are, you know, kind of these days of transition and you don't have to use vacation time towards that. But, you know, once you kind of settle in to where you're going to be, the expectation is that if you have a TA shift, you will be able to contribute remotely. If you're a research degree student, you will be able to continue to make academic progress remotely. Again, that, you know, those expectations may be modified depending on how long this continues. But right now, you know, understanding people are, you know, everybody's flexible for these, you know, several days of transition, but there is an expectation that, you know, all of us are going to say, I mean, I'm working from home. I started doing that this morning. The graduate school was preparing last week and having staff test working from home remotely. And by now we have, I think, all but four graduate school staff who are working remotely as of this morning. And so, you know, again, we understand there's several days of transition, especially for those people who are, you know, leaving the area and dealing with travel challenges. But, you know, kind of think about it that this is the new normal for a couple of months, that we'll all be working remotely. And so we need to adapt and be creative in the ways that we continue to make progress. You know, life doesn't go on hold for that, as much as we might like that to happen.
Thank you.
Okay, next I have Ariel.
All right, hi. Thank you so much for the updates. Wait, can you guys hear me? Okay, great. Thank you so much for the updates. I just had a question about the sick leave policies for grad students on campus. And I know this isn't a really urgent thing right now, but definitely, like, some people I know and I were trying to figure out what the sick leave policies were in, like, the last 2 weeks leading up to now. And people were wondering, you know, if I feel sick, you know, my particular course doesn't really have any defined sick leave policies. Like my course that I TA for example, the professors are amazing, but the sick leave policy is basically don't take a sick leave or, you know, beg a different TA to cover it at the last minute and they might not be able to. So I'm wondering, yeah, like if you could clarify like what the official policy is on that and like whether, you know, that was being reevaluated in light of coronavirus.
Yeah, the official policy and particularly with COVID-19 is that if you're sick, you should not be around other people. And so the official policy on this, you can look at University Policy 1.3, you know, just search for that on the university website, is to have a discussion with your supervisor and let them know that that you're not able to. And, you know, your supervisor then will work with you and with others to find ways to cover that. Frankly, the way that this pandemic spreads in communities with exponential rates of increase, there are questions about how that is actually going to play out for, you know, across the campus in terms of getting alternative, you know, alternative people to step in to meet whatever duties there are, you know, for any kind of duties, whether it's TA, whether it's, you know, lab tech, whether it's faculty, you know, who are leading courses. You know, there is a good possibility that there's going to be a high percentage of the student labor force and the faculty labor force and the staff labor force that is incapacitated at any particular time. So I don't have a good answer for that. I think is to stay in communication with those you interact with. And you know, the best thing in my view would be to have anticipatory discussions about this, that, you know, if I am ill with COVID-19, or I think I am, you know, who do I contact? When do I contact them? What are the provisions for alternatives to step in and cover my duty?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's, I think it would just be really great if there were some sort of campus-wide policy on that, because I know I've taught with a high fever before because I felt like, you know, my job was sort of at risk if I didn't fulfill my teaching duties, right? That's like part of your grad student contract. So I was just wondering if, you know, there's a way that, you know, students could officially be allowed to not teach if they think they might be ill.
So I will say again, with COVID-19, the communications that have come out have been clear that if you are self-isolating, if you're quarantined, if you're you know, diagnosed with COVID-19, if you think you have COVID-19, you should not be with other people, you should not be in your duties, and you should be in touch with your supervisors to figure out alternatives. And that's where I'm suggesting that if your faculty supervisor is not initiating that conversation to, you know, you could take the lead and initiate that conversation and refer to university communications that are posted, that people who are ill should not be coming in, should not be interacting with other people, and alternatives need to be worked out.
Okay, next I have Doa.
You can hear me, right? Okay. So my first question is going to be an add-on to Ariel's question. So given the fact that our responsibilities right now are remote, we are not, if we are sick, we're not really coming in contact with the students, but we may not be able to physically teach or help students learn something. So I think that when Ariel was asking for a official sick leave, I think that that may be one thing that she was considering. So even if I am not in contact with a student, I may not be feeling physically okay to teach. So is there any, sorry, my English is failing. Are there any things that are said by the grad school about this?
Again, the language that's in the communications is if you're self-isolating because of COVID-19, if you're quarantined because of COVID-19, if you think you're ill because of COVID-19, don't do your duties. Let somebody know, contact your supervisor. Yes.
My question is, with all the closures, I think the most recent email I got from grad school said that graduate students aren't allowed to be on campus unless they have to after Wednesday. So my question is going to be, what is Cornell thinking of providing in this time? So I am able to work remotely, but I need my graduate student office to have internet and electricity. And I was just wondering, are there any news about this?
I'm having a little bit difficulty hearing you, so I'm not quite sure what you're asking. I heard something about you're at home and not in your graduate student office, but I'm not quite sure what the question is. So
yes,
I'll get it better and can repeat it.
I will repeat that. My question is, will Cornell be providing electricity and internet to the offices and buildings, even if the graduate students will not be there?
So will the Cornell facilities still continue to have internet? Yeah, Cornell is not shutting down. Cornell as a campus is not shutting down. The guidance is that if you're not conducting critical research like cell cultures or animals or plants that need to be maintained, to achieve the objective of de-densifying the campus and having social distancing, you should not be here if you don't absolutely, for critical need to be here. If the only way that you have, like say you have TA duties and remotely, And the only way that you can do that remotely is to be in your graduate student office. As long as you are practicing social distancing and are only here for those duties, and that's the best that can be done, that at least for now, that is possible to do. But again, you know, part of the COVID-19 Access Fund is to provide for people resources to be able to do remote learning if you don't have that ability from wherever you are staying put through all of this. So that might be something to make an inquiry with the Access Fund about. So for example, we have quite a number of staff in the graduate school who are in rural areas and do not typically have internet access. And so we were able on fairly short notice to purchase whatever they're called, Wi-Fi hubs or something like that for them. And it's working very smoothly. So, you know, it wasn't a huge expense. That might be something to look into, you know, through the Access Fund, if that would be possible.
Okay, next I have Jeff.
Hey, Dean Youth. Thanks for coming in. I had a quick question. It's kind of in line with this about services on campus. Obviously, campus is not closed, but depending on the service that's available, there might be impact in terms of what students, especially graduate students, might need. So for example, the biotechnology research core is closed, but I was curious whether you had a gauge of other services on campus, like librarian services or the statistical consulting unit.
Yeah, that's a great question. So to my knowledge, the library was closed yesterday and today. And that was essentially to give their staff a chance to regroup and figure out what they're able to do. I don't know, you know, they decided to do that even before the announcement Sunday that the provost put out to all faculty to start winding down, ramping down non-critical research activities. So that may be what the library was discussing today in their day of closure. So watch the library website. They have a COVID-19 link and you'll get updates from them. My understanding is that Cornell Health plans to remain open. So those services should continue, you know, as far as I understand, the whole suite of services that Cornell Health delivers. Again, check their website. Beyond that, I really don't know about the statistical consulting unit. You know, I expect that, you know, the idea here is that to the extent possible, all staff and faculty are expected to work remotely. Not closed down. And so, you know, my sense is the kind of work that Statistical Consulting Unit does can be done remotely. I would suggest first looking at their website. You know, I would advise against, you know, like trying to phone or email people. Just, you know, in these few days, lots is going on. There's lots of transition. Everybody's getting bombarded by inquiries. But first, check their website for any service that you're curious about. And then if you can't find a clear answer on either their office website or the university-wide COVID-19 website, you know, FAQs and stuff, you know, then shoot an email to their, you know, contact us address or something like that.
Okay, next I have Mila.
Hello, do you listen to me? Can you hear me? Hi, Dean. Thank you so much for your time. This question might be sound obvious for people that are from here, but as an international student, I have a doubt that if I have one of the symptoms, what should I do? And like, if the Cornell Health covers it, because I've been hearing, and I think 50% of my program are international students, and 55% of them are staying. We did a survey from my student board. And there's a lot of people that are staying here. So I would like to let them know what they should do if they have one of the symptoms. And after like that, what we should do.
So are you on the student health plan?
Yes.
Okay. So student health plan, has coverage through Cornell Health. I mean, you probably know more of the operational details of that than I do. You know how it happens on a visit by visit basis as you use it. But the general recommendations are that if you're experiencing, you think you're experiencing COVID-19 symptoms, you should first call the health provider before you go in, because anybody who has symptoms and then goes into a doctor's office, you're potentially exposing a whole lot of people to it. So call first, I'll speak from personal experience here that my younger daughter lives in Manhattan. She has a coworker who was experiencing symptoms. A few days after that, my daughter began experiencing symptoms. So she called the health provider. They said, come in, but follow these procedures. So you don't like going to the general office area. We'll meet you here. Blah blah blah. So what the health providers are trying to do is to is to separate, if you will, kind of the non-COVID cases from the potential COVID cases. So call Cornell Health first, and they'll give you instructions about what next steps you should be taking.
As a follow-up question is, do you think that we should use also Cornell's services in order to pick us up if we don't have a car or a way to get to Cornell Health, if that the Cornell services of I think it's Cornell Transportation, something like that, will be working in coordination with Cornell Health to ensure those services?
That I don't know. I haven't heard that question before, and I don't know the answer. So Jan, if you could, if you're listening, if you could put that on our to-do list, and we'll try to follow up with Cornell Health and see what they advise.
Thank you so much, Dean.
Okay, the last question I have is from Kavya.
Sorry, I just had to unmute for a second. I guess this is more of a broader question, but we kind of talked briefly where it's like, okay, after the period of transition, we're gonna find like a new normal where we continue working. And I guess my question is, this isn't really a normal. We're having students leave, but if you are TAing, you have no idea what your students are facing off campus. This has never been done before. How do you get back to normality? Like, are we expecting students to have the same level of, an assessment that we had previously, the same productivity as normal? It seems highly unlikely to me, just from the past week, to get back to normal levels of productivity. So, yeah,
I wasn't suggesting it would be back to the old normal, to what we're used to. Where are you? New normal? Maybe you want to call it a new equilibrium, a temporary, we hope, equilibrium. There are conversations that are ongoing at the senior leadership level with faculty leaders as well, to think about grading changes that will be made, more use of SU, for example, potentially, all sorts of options. So that is being led. Those conversations are being led by other units. Other people have other responsibilities within the senior leadership. I suspect those discussions will lead to some decisions being made, as I understand it, as early as this week. So there should be more communication about that. But yes, those discussions are absolutely underway. Dean of Faculty, Charlie Van Loan, is doing a great job, I think, with getting encouragement and suggestions about flexibility out. Vice Provost for Undergraduate Education, Lisa Nishi, is kind of taking the lead, spearheading conversations about all courses, just to try to keep some consistency in the discussions. Those discussions are underway. Watch for more information this week.
Thanks. Yeah.
That expires the speaking list. Unless anyone has any other questions, I'm going to hand it back to Andy. Oh, Jake?
Oh, yep. Can you hear me? Sorry, slightly a mess. Last minute cooking dinner at the same time as listening. But my question was if Cornell plans to do any sort of telehealth services, because that's something that's becoming increasingly popular.
Yes, the understanding is that Cornell Health is either looking into it or is almost ready to implement, or maybe even has. You know, and you might check their website, but absolutely that's on their agenda.
Ahora, dice, Cornell Health te cubre si estás acá.
¿Cómo si?
Si estás acá, si estás acá en Ítaca.
Oh, Neely, you might want to mute your microphone.
No, o sea, ¿tú seguro? ¿Tú seguro te tienes que...?
Es Cornell Health.
No.
Es de, ah, y a mi seguro me cubre muy alto.
Tu seguro es Aetna. Y uno de tus proveedores de...
Well, that was my question, so thank you.
You're welcome.
Kavya, do you have another question?
Yeah, sorry, it was just a quick follow-up to Jeff that I forgot. In terms of facilities staying open, Cornell Dining, do you know if there's any indication that they'll shut it down, especially since there are students staying on campus and around that might depend on it? And it's not something that can be done remotely, unfortunately.
So my understanding is that for sure Cornell Dining will stay open with you know, some reductions in service, particularly to serve those who are in on-campus housing. My understanding is that some services, but I don't know which ones, will continue on campus, non-residential parts of campus. I don't know the details of that at this point. The latest word, for example, that we had as of yesterday morning, that dining functions at the Big Red Barn would continue to operate. So I believe that was like from 8 a.m. to 3 p.m., something like that. But again, we're, not me personally, but, our graduate school is in touch with dining frequently to try to get updates with them and to figure out if they're making any changes in that. So, my guess is that it just doesn't make sense to maintain a whole lot of dining facilities on, the non-residential parts of campus, because we are, the university is expecting that the majority of people are going to be working remotely. So I don't know, I'm not privy to dining's internal decisions, but, again, check their website and they'll be posting up, updates. And also check the COVID-19 university level FAQs, because there are sections, there's specific sections in there about travel, about health, about, residential living, dying, all that sort of stuff.
All right, thank you.
Okay, Ariel?
Yeah, I just had a quick question about the undergrads. So I know you're not in charge of the undergrads, but I was wondering if you would know, I know they had to apply if they wanted to stay in the dorm housing. Do you know if that decision has been put out to them yet, or like when that'll be put out?
My understanding was that many of those decisions were well underway. But I don't know. Maybe even Manisha, as a trustee, knows that. I don't know if they've all been handled by this point or what, Manisha.
So I don't know if they've all been handled, but I do know that the first wave of exemptions went out Friday afternoon, Friday evening. I can say from talking to Ryan that there's not a cap on exemptions, stuff like that. They are, of course, being mindful because the goal is to promote social distancing, but. They're hopeful that they won't be in a situation that anyone who is in desperate need of needing to stay on campus will be able to. But my understanding is that those have gone through. If an undergrad student has changed their travel plans, there are like links in the emails they got that will allow them to sort of resubmit that exemption survey if they all of a sudden decide that they want to go home or all of a sudden decide they have to stay.
Okay. Andy?
Yes, just to kind of answer that, I do work for West Campus. I'm a graduate resident fellow, and there have been students who have confirmed that they are staying. And we've all received a follow-up email that we need to reply to, letting the campus know that we are, that we didn't change our mind per se, given the fast, everything's moving so fast. So yes, that is, the first wave, like Manisha said, has gone out, and I'm still, I think that they're actually pretty fast about it. So, yeah.
Manisha? Okay, that gets it. I'll hand it back to you, Andy.
Okay. Thank you very much, Dinuth, for sticking around and answering our questions. I believe that is everyone. And if you have any pending questions, let me know at the end. We are going to, the exec team will meet with Dinuth tomorrow, so we can ask her the questions then. But thank you very much. We really, really appreciate it.
Thanks for the opportunity. Everybody take care. Social distance from each other. Wash hands, cough into your sleeve, use tissue, throw it out. And please, I will put out one plea here that I really have to implore you about. Frankly, I've been appalled to see the pictures that I have seen of partying and bar going and Greek life and other kinds of life in College Town, bringing people into close proximity under highly social conditions. Please try to get the word out, not only among the graduate and professional community that's staying here in Ithaca, to refrain highly from doing that, and also to the undergraduates who are in your courses who are still staying in the community. Please refrain from doing that. You all, including my daughter who is 26 years old, she is has been presumptively confirmed, but not by test for COVID-19. Because she doesn't qualify for a test because of her age group, and her age group puts her in a low risk category because she doesn't have underlying health conditions. If you don't have underlying health conditions, you personally are likely not in a high risk category. However, there are many, many people on our campus and in our community. I have a 90-year-old mother who lives in the community. And it's those people who we need everybody to contribute our behavior towards, so that those people who are high risk in our community don't get exposed. So I, again, would just plead with you to please encourage good behavior among your student population and among the undergraduates with whom you interact. So again, thanks again.
Thank you, Dinuth. Bye. Okay. Again, if you have any additional questions, feel free to reach out to us, Alexa, myself, Taylor, or Victoria, or Alex, and let us know what you want to know in case you didn't get a chance to ask. We are meeting with her tomorrow, or if something else comes up from now until then. So, Alexa, can you confirm that the census people are not here? If not, we can move on to the next part of the agenda.
They have not emailed me back.
Okay.
Kate Supron, if you're on, make yourself known, but I don't think you are.
Okay. No? Okay. Then we'll go ahead and move on to the next part of the agenda, which is new business. And this is introduction to Resolution 11. In support of graduate student colleagues participating in the Wildcat Strike. And the main sponsor is Ariel Johnson. Ariel, do you want to share your screen with the resolution, or do you want me to do that for you?
Could you go ahead and do that?
Yes, I do have it open. Let me get that. Let me see. Can I see it on my other screen. Can everyone else? Yeah. Okay, with that, I'll pass the floor over to Ariel so she can introduce the resolution.
Okay, great. Thank you, Andy. So first of all, I really want to give a huge thanks to Manisha, who did a lot of the legwork for this, wrote the first draft, and just has really been a great advocate for grad students in need. So thank you so much for all the work you've put into this. I'm really proud to sponsor this Resolution 11 in support of our graduate student colleagues participating in the Wildcat Strike. So the basics of this are, there are students who have been on strike because they don't make enough money to support their basic needs, and their university has retaliated and fired some of them for asking for, you know, very basic and reasonable demands. So we just want to kind of take a stand and say, you know, that's not okay. Grad students should get paid a reasonable amount to support their needs, and also they shouldn't be fired if they protest unreasonable treatment by a university. So just a little background on this actual situation and how the Wildcat Strike started. So this all started out at the University of California, Santa Cruz. So that's in a very, very expensive area, because it's both in Silicon Valley and it's a vacation destination. So you can imagine that housing in that area is incredibly expensive. And a lot of estimates are that an average one bedroom apartment.
Wait, Ariel, I think you were muted for a second.
Yeah, I think I was muted too. Okay.
It's not censorship. That's okay. Yeah, you're back.
Muted by host. Okay.
Okay,
so as I was saying, Santa Cruz is an incredibly expensive area, and it's in Silicon Valley, and it's a tourist destination. So a lot of estimates have it that the average one-bedroom apartment is $2,300. And unfortunately, the graduate students at UCSC only make $2,434 pre-tax per month for only 9 months out of the year for some of them. So their monthly salary or entire stipend is $2,400 pre-tax. And then if you're paying $2,300 for your apartment, you can imagine that that doesn't leave a lot of money for the other really basic needs of life. So food, medical care, child care, and understandably, these students were really frustrated. So first they tried to work extensively with the administration last fall and even previous to that to try and get this remedied, but the administration didn't seem like they wanted to cooperate, and so they resorted to a strike. So why is this considered to be a quote-unquote wildcat strike? So the reason is that the University of California has one union contract that's agreed to by all of the students in the union at all of the different schools. And so that includes students who are in schools where there's a really low cost of living, but also students at schools with a high cost of living. And they're all represented by this United Auto Workers affiliate. And so what happened was, when they voted on the previous pay contract, the University of California Santa Cruz students realized that the contract really wasn't going to support their basic needs. So they overwhelmingly voted against it. 83% of them voted against this contract. But unfortunately, across the UC system, union contract that effectively didn't represent what the students at UCSC actually thought their needs were. So because they're technically going against a union contract, and because the union contract said, you know, you're not allowed to strike, this is considered to be a quote-unquote wildcat strike. But just to clarify, you know, this strike does represent the opinion of the overwhelming majority of students at UC Santa Cruz, who do believe that, you know, they're not being paid enough money to support their very basic needs. So basically, the students started out by withholding grades for last semester, which is really one of the main ways that graduate students can exercise power. Unfortunately, instead of, you know, listening to this peaceful protest, the university sent out very threatening messages to a lot of the students, and also encouraged undergraduates to report on their TAs who were participating in the strike. And so this created a really hostile atmosphere on campus, and also started alerting other people in the academic sort of world to what was going on at UCSD. Other organizations and schools started to support the UCSD students in their strike to have a cost of living adjustment. And so these included several organizations and unions representing teachers, such as the University Council, American Federation of Teachers, which is like the UC professor union, and included the Academic Senate, which is basically the equivalent of like a faculty assembly, I believe. And it also included graduate students at the University of California, Santa Barbara, UC Davis, UC San Diego, UC Berkeley, and UCLA have also all started some sort of strike action in solidarity. And as well as the American Association of University Professors has also released a statement of support. So that's like a broader professor community. So you would think that with all of this broad support, the university would then start, you know, listening to the students. Unfortunately, they took the very drastic action of firing some of the UCSC students. So at least 74 of the UCSC students have been fired for this peaceful protest for a cost of living adjustment to meet their basic needs. So this resolution is basically just addressing that fact, saying that we condemn those actions taken by administrators. They're unacceptable. You shouldn't be firing people for advocating for their basic needs. And that we stand in solidarity with graduate students across the UC system who are striking in cooperation with the UCSC students or have taken other actions to support them. And that we want people in our own community to stand in solidarity with the Wildcat strike. So finally, I just want to say, this is really important that we talk about this in the context of coronavirus, because you know, because this sort of crisis is happening, the University of California could just use that to sort of ignore this concern or paper over it. And of course, you know, the strikers have brought all of their protests online in an effort, of course, to not get people infected and to keep the community safe, which is great. But we don't want this to become an invisible issue, especially because those students who were fired now don't have healthcare, right? At a time where they would really need it most. And there are international students who are not going to be able to stay in the US, right? And have to like think about travel arrangements and that sort of thing this time when it's like really hectic. So it's very important that we don't forget about this issue and that we do stand with the Wildcat strikers at this time. Thanks.
Thank you, Ariel. I'm gonna stop sharing unless there's something on the resolution itself that you wanna point out. If not, we can bring it over to the Q&A.
It'll be the same process as it was for Dean Newth.
Right, so I'm gonna stop sharing. Is that okay, Ariel? Yeah, okay.
Okay, Kavya, I see your hand is up.
Yeah, I guess I just wanted to say in support of Ariel and everything she said, it becomes a much bigger issue with international students. One, because of visa restrictions, international students can't work anywhere but campus, so they're entirely dependent on our internships. They have far more restrictive hours that they can work, where they can work, and if they lose those TA-ships, then, like she said, they're being effectively deported because they have to have a job to stay in the to stay in the U.S.
Okay, Victoria, I see you asked a question. Victoria, are you having issues? Victoria, can you talk?
While she fixes that, we can we go over to Manisha?
Yeah, Manisha, go ahead.
Yeah, I just wanted to add into Kavya's point about this disproportionately affecting international students, not just in response to those who are fired and have lost their TA-ship, but quite a few number of UCSC graduate students have taken out loans to cover the deficit between their salary and the cost of living, and international students have a much harder time securing those loans. So they are suffering under the weight of this deficit between their salary and the cost of living in a way that their domestic counterparts are not.
Okay, Victoria, do you want to maybe put your question in the chat? And then I can say it out loud. Hi. I can't hear you. You can text it to me. Never mind. You're texting me. Okay. Does anybody else have any questions while we wait for her to text me? Or it hasn't come through. You sent it? Okay, it hasn't come through yet.
I think Andy's raising his hand.
Andy, you can. Yeah.
So in the meantime, while we get Victoria's question, I guess I do have a question. So what the resolution is, it's a statement of solidarity. Is that correct? Or is it asking, like in case this were to happen at Cornell, does it list actionable things that we can do or protections? That's my question, yeah.
So it doesn't say anything about what would happen if something like this happened at Cornell. The three main things in the "be it therefore resolved" are that we want to stand in solidarity with the strikers. We want to condemn the actions of the administrators who sort of unfairly intimidated and fired people. And then we also want to encourage the Cornell community to help the strikers in any way they can. Yeah.
Yeah, just to echo what Ariel said there, it's not likely to happen here at Cornell, not necessarily the cost of living adjustment, but the situation that they're in, because we are not unionized in the same way that they are. That could, of course, change in the future. But the last be it finally resolved clause is actually asking, like providing some examples of tangible ways Cornell community members can support the Wildcat strike, whether that be through sharing their messaging on social media, whether that be by contributing to GoFundMes for some of the students who have lost their job, or even boycotting events that are happening at the UC system. Obviously that's potentially gonna happen anyway, given COVID, but before sort of things had escalated with COVID, a way that a lot of faculty members were showing support for graduate students at UCSC was by refusing to attend events in the UC system while this was going on. So that is an option, but slightly irrelevant now.
I didn't receive a text from Victoria. So unless there are any other questions. Okay, Andy, back to you.
Thanks, Alexa. Maybe Victoria can ask a question during open forum, which is what we're going to do next. So for this portion of the meeting, we'd like to ask of you if you have any concerns. We'd also like to brainstorm ideas as to how we can continue the last couple of meetings for the GPSA. We're obviously going to be meeting virtually. Thank you all for your patience. You guys have been great with virtual setting. So if you have any ideas as to what we can be doing in terms of meetings, we brainstormed a bit in exec. One of the ideas is to keep the three meetings that we have left, two in April, one in May. And keep in mind that our last two meetings, the last meeting in April and the first meeting in May, these are elections. And the next, in one of these meetings, we would have to present, which I think is the most important part of business, which is introducing or submitting the GPCI, which by the current COVID-19 does, I don't think, affects the timeline of that. I'm just reading the text from Wendy. So I guess I'd like to open the floor to any ideas or recommendations. That was one of them. Continue the three meetings that we have left, just as we are doing now. The second idea is maybe consolidating two of those meeting elections and just having one big elections meeting, and then finalizing any business, and that's our what we've thought of. So we welcome any ideas. Also, we'd be able to finish this business as well as any lingering business that we have left from the semester. So to answer any of your questions, the thing that was introduced today, the Wildcat Strike, that will be voted on at the next meeting. Because for sure, we'll be having an additional meeting. We just don't know how many we will be having. Okay.
Hey.
So I'll go ahead, Alexa.
Oh, I was just saying that I'd take over, but you're not done yet. So. Oh, you're done? Okay. So
double. Can people hear me? Sorry. Victoria.
Oh,
I called in.
Hi.
Hey,
do you want to answer a question really quick?
Yeah, so I just wanted to speak briefly on why I am somewhat uncomfortable supporting the legislation. So I'll just say this right now. I'm not a voting member, so you don't have to worry about me, but I don't really support what the administration did nor what the students did. Because one, I felt like they were using people as pawns. I remember in undergrad the stress that was associated with the grades I received and getting a conditional offer for graduate school. And I think it's somewhat similar to Trump saying, at the expense of using people as pawns, I'm not going to release grades so that I can get what I want. And I just don't ever support that in any means. It's different than a factory or a union boycott. Because it's the product that's not being sold. It's not necessarily people who are directly being hurt. The second issue that I have is that
Victoria, sorry to interrupt you.
No actionable items as they pertain to Cornell University. I think something that would be more productive is to attach actual items of what we would do here. Otherwise, it's just going to be what I think in the eyes of the administration. Sort of another thing that we're sort of complaining about without direct relevance to the university. And then lastly, I think that I'm not sure if any attempts have been made to reach out to the university to see if this actually helps them, or if there's something else that can be done, supposed to more of a performative legislation.
Victoria, really quickly, some of the parts of your your question were not very clear, so I don't know if maybe distancing the phone or the headphones would help. So maybe repeat the main points, because I know a lot of people could hear you, but we couldn't necessarily understand you.
Okay. Hello.
That sounded clear. Hello?
How is this now?
A little better. Can you say something more?
Okay, can you hear me now?
That's a lot clearer, yes.
Okay. So my main points were, one was that I don't support the administration or the students because I felt that they were using people as pawns, saying at the expense of the students we're not gonna release grades, kind of like how Trump said, I'm not gonna give paychecks until I receive what I want. And I differentiated that between several other unions who are boycotting a product and are not harming people. The second main point that I made was that it needs to have a direct actionable item as it pertains to Cornell University. So for instance, adding something that says how it's relevant to us and what we can do going forward. Otherwise, I said I felt that it was performative and not something that can actually materialize. And the third thing was that the administration might view this as just, something that's just kind of performative and not productive. It's just making noise and that we're complaining. But those are the three main points that I made. I'm not sure if that was, if people could hear that though.
Yeah, I could hear that. Thank you, Victoria. So I guess to address the first point, a really key thing is that throughout the strike, they've tried to really accommodate students who have real needs and get grades out in those circumstances. So students who need their grades released for financial aid purposes, or students who need their grades released for fellowships, things like that. They have released grades for that, and that is the official position of the strike. So I think that is sort of a little bit different than using people as pawns, because the grad students are really exploited in this situation, and they are really just trying to get money for basic needs, and they are still providing learning content to students. That occasionally happened from striking lines, but they've really made a real effort to keep providing education and the necessary things that students need in their careers. I guess in the sense of this being a performative action, one of the things that the Wildcat strike really needs right now is more awareness of what's going on. The coronavirus is happening, people have so much else to worry about, but really these strikers still just do need to be supported and have people on their side, whether that's signing petitions, donating a little bit of money. If people don't know about this, they can't help and sustain the efforts to, get the people who were fired reinstated and get a just living wage for these workers. So, in some sense, it is really performative, but the goal is to increase visibility of this in Cornell. And I think the administration wouldn't necessarily read this as a complaint against Cornell's administration, because really the situation is so different and specific. We're not attacking Cornell in any way. The goal is to stand in solidarity with what's happening there and just get the word out in the Cornell community. In terms of actionable items, if you have anything that would be a really good actionable item, I would love if you could help us add that, because anything we could do to support the Wildcat strikers would be great. Thank you for thinking so much about this. I'm really glad you took the time and read it and thought about all these things.
Okay, Doa?
Thank you. Sorry, I don't know if that came through.
Doa, before you go on, just to make sure everyone's on the right page, we're back to discussing the resolution. So I see Kavya and Jake. We're back to discussing the resolution. We'll go back to open forum after this discussion. Thank you.
My point was about the open forum, so I'll just wait.
Yeah, mine was also open forum as well, so I can wait.
If you have something to comment on the resolution, please message me, because other than that, I think everybody was just open forum.
I had a quick note on the resolution, which is that as graduate students, you don't have a lot of power to affect change in any other way. So just in terms of like holding people hostage, I guess, like I do see the point, but I don't see anything else the graduate students could have done to make administration listen to them, because there's not much power that graduate students hold. That was just my comments on the resolution.
Okay. Anyone else with anything to say about the resolution, or speak now or forever hold your peace? Okay, Andy?
Okay, so we'll go back to open forum, and I'll leave the floor to Alexa.
Okay, so Doa, you had something, correct?
Yes, hopefully everyone can hear me. I just wanted to remind everyone that we did skip a resolution because the sponsor wasn't there, I believe, in the last meeting. So I know that, Andy, you were talking about what is going to happen in the upcoming meeting, so I just wanted to make sure that everyone remembers that.
Yes, thank you, Doa. So at that last meeting, we're going to do any unfinished business that the assembly wants to take up, which it could be one meeting, which it could be two meetings. So this resolution, as well as the snow day resolution, is what we have pending. We also have another resolution, the Julia Feliz, which I'm not sure if that will pop back up, but if people are more welcome to bringing that back up again for the next meeting. If any resolutions are left unattended, they disappear from the system and you would have to resubmit it in the following year with a new exec, just so everyone knows. Manisha, I see that you're making a face. Is that?
So I just have a clarification question. Were these resolutions tabled indefinitely? Is that why they haven't come back up to the floor? Because technically that only happens if a resolution was formally tabled indefinitely. If that hasn't happened, then whatever committee it was sent to is supposed to bring it back to the floor.
Right. The Julia Feliz resolution was tabled and was sent to a committee. And I believe the last resolution was tabled indefinitely up until bring it back. Go ahead, Alexa. Yes, Alexa?
Yeah, and so was the GPCI resolution. That one was tabled until not this meeting, but the following one.
Yes, as well as a circulator resolution. So, yes. So, Doa, thank you for bringing that up. We have a lot of business. So that might require more than two meetings or more than one meeting, which will also include voting. So thank you for that suggestion or reminder.
Okay, Kavya?
Sorry, have to have touch for that mute. Yeah, I think that was going to be an echoing that there is a lot of business, so maybe two meetings are necessary, but also I'm unaware of people's travel plans. So is there a way, especially when it comes to things like voting, that we're making sure people on different time zones can also access these meetings? I don't know if anyone's traveled internationally back home, in which case they might be in a time zone like 6 hours away and can make this meeting time.
Right. Yes, that is something that we have discussed. One of the solutions to that is to send out a poll after the meeting, just to see where everyone might be at. Victoria, I think you might have your mic on. That is a possibility that we would consider. We know that 5 p.m. here could be 2 in the morning in Europe or wherever people might be. Maybe not Euro, because that's people can't go there anymore. okay. Yes. So yes.
All right.
Okay, Jake.
Yep. Okay. So I was thinking of things that were really missing from the virtual meeting, and the thing that came to mind was food. What if we decided to do with that budget that we had for the food? Is it just going straight towards? I would suggest the access fund, but I don't know what we've done with that money.
That's a great question and a great suggestion. if Wendy is still on, I'd like to ask her if that money comes from the GPSA budget or if it comes from Joel Molina. If it's the GPSA budget, then maybe we can do something else with that money. We have more access to that fund. But if it's through Joel Molina, which is through the Office of the Assemblies, we might not have that possibility. So, Wendy?
Hi, everyone. I'm not putting my camera on because I don't want you to see my dining room. I would have to actually double check with Gina. I do believe it's from the GPSA budget, not from Office of the Assemblies or Joel's shop. So Gina actually was supposed to Zoom in for this as well, but she and I are going to be in communication pretty much every day. While I'm working from my dining room table and she's working from her off her home as well. So I will definitely put this in a note. And she also gets a meeting brief from me after this. So I will mention that as well. And hopefully we'll have an answer for everyone. And then Andy or Alexa or someone can relay that to you all.
Cool.
Thank you, Andy. Yeah, so that's a great suggestion, Jake. We just, so everyone's, for transparency's sake, we only used half of the reserve fund as far as the GPSA reserve. So there's still some money left over there, in there. In Ariel, I know the FC has a ton of money left over. So we definitely did not use a ton of FC money. So if need be, we can always request to donate more money from all ends.
Okay. Sounds good. Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Next I have Jeremy.
Hi, yeah, can you hear me?
Mm-hmm.
Great. This is a general question, possibly for Ariel with the FC. So I'm a field rep, and we were going to have events on campus as part of a weekly seminar with my department, but now those are going to be canceled, and we had already requested funds and received approval. But now I'm wondering, well, what happens for people who've, received approval for funds of that nature and no longer having events on campus? Is there a possibility of adapting the guidelines or rules of what money can be spent on? If we've already requested it for a specific event, well, we might need to change what that is now. And second question is there allowing any further request of funds, or is that now off the table?
Yeah, great questions. So I sent out an email clarifying the new policies, but yeah, this doesn't address some of those things. So thank you for asking. So the GPSAFC funding rules still apply, so you can apply for more money. You do have to follow the rules, though, which generally means that the rules state that you have to have events on campus, or you have to, if you're having events off campus, like provide a transportation plan from campus. We really think that it would be great if people weren't gathering right now, so I don't think we're going to be approving money for new gatherings off campus. And I don't think we're going to be reallocating money from large on-campus gatherings to large off-campus gatherings. However, since you can still apply for money, if your organization, you said your field organization, like if there's something that you needed for your grad student office, that sort of thing, like now would be a great time to allocate money towards that. And if you had an event canceled that you'd allocated funding towards, and now you want to reallocate that funding, I'm being really flexible right now, just reach out to me and we'll figure out what we can do. But yeah, I'm like, we're not trying to have people gathering right now. So please do not think you can repurpose the on-campus gathering money for a big off-campus gathering. That's not gonna happen. Let's see. Oh yeah, I should also just mention for everybody who's watching. So for groups that have money allocated towards events and then they're not happening because of coronavirus, other things, don't worry about it. Your tier status is not going to be affected at all if you do not use funds and you do not have to do anything to cancel an event. Just simply don't use those funds, and your tier status will be the same next year as it is this year, unless you choose to apply for an increase, in which case we will take into account the fact that everything's being canceled for coronavirus, and really just, you know, look at your spending record in the past. And, you know, make a really rational decision about that. Gosh, I think I answered most of the parts of your question. Is there anything that I forgot?
No, that was very helpful. Yeah, I guess I saw your email, and it's been kind of kicking around in my head, those general questions, and you really covered it with that. So I wanted to at least give the opportunity in case other people also had those questions. So thanks, Ariel.
Thank you for asking.
Sorry to interrupt, but I just had a quick follow-up. So what about for things like virtual events? So for example, this Friday, I was thinking of holding something. I don't know if any of you know what Jackbox is, but it's basically something where I can put on my screen the game and then people can play on an individual device like a computer or a phone. So I wondered if funds could possibly be reallocated to virtual type events, say watching a movie or playing a game like that.
Yeah, for sure. So basically just reach out to me and we can get those funds reallocated. You could also, like, you know, your organization could do something like purchase a movie on Amazon and then stream it together or something like that. The FC rules still apply. So you're going to have to have the event submitted before the actual event occurs. Okay. And yeah, be in contact with me if you have questions about that sort of thing.
Cool. Thank you.
Okay, Ariel, you still have the floor if you had something you wanted to say.
Oh yeah, I just wanted to say about the Feliz resolution. I wonder, I don't know what the rules are. I would like to just get it tabled permanently because, you know, I'm not sure I believe in the contents anymore. I definitely think that a lot of my journeys to look into what the situation of unpaid appointments is on campus have shown that they're really not supported very well in many ways. But I think I don't agree with the specific contents of it after talking to, you know, Sarah Davidson-Evaniga, talking to HR, talking to different diversity offices. I still want there to be a way we can support unpaid appointments, and I'm glad that we discussed it, but if there's a way that we can, like, have it on the record that we discussed it, but just permanently table the resolution, I would be in favor of that. So,
yeah. Okay, Mila.
Hello. Yeah, I have a question. It was a follow-up of one of the questions that were made before about like the following meetings. Maybe that we, I don't know if this is possible, but maybe we can do like a 24 window for questions. So we can allow people that are in, let's say, India or like another different time zone to ask questions and maybe do like an interactive way of responding them to them. I don't know if that will work, Andy, or what are your thoughts on that? But I think that's a good idea to just be inclusive for everybody.
Yeah, that's a great suggestion. I don't know if the Office of the Assemblies can like create a website or a forum where we can do this, right? Like have a thread for each resolution and have people comment on it beforehand. That way could have a discussion before it. And then the meeting could be super efficient where we just vote on it instead of having all the discussion. Not that I'm saying we should take that away. That's a great suggestion. I will see if that's actually possible. Or if you, Mila, have any suggestions as to how we can do that based off past experience, I would love to hear it.
Mila. Okay. I do not, but I can look it up how to do it. But yeah, I think a forum or maybe I was actually thinking after the meeting, but I think before is actually more efficient. So just having this discussion before and the meeting just decide, and like if we cannot, because sometimes with classes and all this, it's all virtual. Maybe at the moment that you're having the meeting, maybe we cannot be in that moment because everything is chaotic. So maybe just you know, window of 24 hours, beginning, I don't know, Sunday morning to Monday at the time of the meeting, we have that window to ask questions. To, and then in the person that is sponsoring the resolution can, you know, clarify those, and maybe voting members can have a window of 10 hours after, like after the meeting, to vote on the resolutions that we were not able to be on. Like, of course, exception of the quorum and stuff. I'm not talking about that, but like about voting. Yeah.
Definitely. That's a great suggestion. Taking this these discussions outside of the actual meetings, and having them elsewhere at on our own time. I'll see if we can do that. And I'd love to hear if everyone else is interested in doing that. So do let me know. Thank you.
Jake?
I was gonna say, I'm agreeing with Leo, can probably be done on Slack. I know our Slack's been kind of dead for a little while, but there is a GPSA Slack, and we could have a separate channel for every resolution if we want. And we could also do live notes off the meeting, so if someone isn't able to make the meeting at the time, they could go through the live notes and see what was happening and what the discussion was.
Absolutely, yeah. Take advantage of that resource that we don't take advantage of. Yeah, for sure. Good idea. Thank you. We'll send out the GPSA Slack in the meeting summary, or I can send it out after the meeting. And that could be a good alternative. Thank you, Kavya, for reminding us.
Yeah. Okay. Kavya, did you have anything else to say? No? Okay. Anthony?
Nope, that thing.
Hi, just a quick comment on Mila's suggestion. I would appreciate if you do decide to do something like a forum to discuss a resolution in advance. A lot of questions are brought up because someone heard someone else ask something, and so I'd appreciate if you do a forum that you sort of recant the forum before a vote, just to give an opportunity for people who didn't read it to comment. That's all. Thank you.
Great. Thanks, Anthony. We'll be sure to open up the floor to anyone who does want to discuss the resolution or a comment that someone else has made. Absolutely.
Okay. Unless I don't see anyone else, this is your last chance. Okay, Andy.
Again, if anything else does come up as far as your ideas for how we can manage the rest of the business after this meeting, let us know. These suggestions have been great, I think. So we will let you know what the idea is. But for sure, after the meeting, we will create a poll to see where everyone will be or is scheduled to be for the next month, and see if we can find like a common time that works for everyone or most of everyone. I think that, let me see, that was, we can, that wraps up our open forum session. And we can go on to committee Q&A. So if the chairs are here, I'll call on you and you can open the floor to see if you have committee update. So Alexa, do we have anything from the executive committee?
Executive committee, no.
No, okay. Operations, Victoria, are you still here?
I am. So yeah, none right now, except for I did want to be a resource to anyone who may need help sorting out anything that they need to do by the charter or bylaws.
So just hit me up. So that was, you want to be a resource for something bylaws and charter? Okay. So welcome back to Victoria. Do we have anything? Is Taylor here? And I don't think we have a communications update, just that we are working on a newsletter that will be sent out soon. Finance committee? Ariel?
Again, you know, if you have needs, apply to the Access Fund. The other thing is we typically require Tier 4 organizations to send a representative to our meetings, but, you know, obviously these meetings are, A, going to be held virtually for the rest of the semester, if there's some meetings left, and then also we're just not going to penalize groups that do not send a representative. So everybody be safe. There's things that are more important than budgets. If you do have any questions about budget stuff, do reach out to me.
Andy, you're still muted. We can't hear you.
Thank you. okay, thank you. So Victoria did put in the chat. Victoria, can we mute you? There we go. Okay. So Victoria just posted in the chat responsibilities they are delegated to by the charter. I'm pretty sure everyone can see it. So if you have any questions about those, let Victoria know. Anything from appropriations? Did Everett make it to the meeting? No? Okay, we'll move on to finance. Thank you, Ariel, for your update. Student advocacy?
I don't have any updates.
Thank you, Jaren. DISC, Kavya?
I think given the new avoiding gathering restrictions, we're going to table some of our community conversations and see maybe if we can move them offline or to Zoom. But yeah, if you're just echoing the same things that Exec Board has said, there are problems with any of the restrictions, let us know, and if there's any way we can help.
Okay. Thank you very much. Programming, Casey?
Not really any updates other than Grad Ball is going to be canceled, of course. For now, I guess programming board activities will be put on hold until, you know, things settle down.
Thank you, Casey. Faculty awards, Cody?
Yeah, so the only update that I have is that I have a couple of people who have volunteered finally. But it would be nice, all the people who have volunteered so far are people that are in physical sciences in some way. So it'd be nice to have some more representatives from other portions of the graduate and the graduate and professional schools. So feel free to reach out to me. My net ID is CJD259. And I'm not sure how things will be affected by the changes. Obviously, the way that we do that we traditionally have done meetings will have to change. And I haven't quite figured out exactly how that's going to look. But I think we can work things out remotely. And that's it.
Doa has a question for Andy.
Sure.
Yeah, go ahead.
Hi, Cody, are you interested in recruiting from anyone, like not just the DPSA field representative? I was wondering if you can send us an email that we can forward to our department.
I can do that. I can send out an email. Things have been a little hectic. I don't know if you guys have all noticed this. The last couple of weeks have been kind of crazy since the last meeting. So I was actually planning on sending out an email to everybody about that as well. So thank you for the reminder.
Next, we have the general committee. Is Rebecca, Becca, or Mo here? No? Okay. Grad school, Jen, do you have an update for us?
Hey, I'll just say quickly, check announcements tonight and the additional more ad hoc announcements coming out tomorrow. I always think the information that comes from the graduate school is important, but I expect there'll be announcement tomorrow about change of some deadlines at the university for dropping classes. And what I think is a big announcement about grading. I think Barb alluded to that tonight. And I do encourage you to go to the graduate school website and the Cornell website, because those things are posted as soon as they're ready to announce. I appreciate everything you guys are doing, your flexibility, your social distancing. There are two of us in the graduate school over 60, and I'm closer to 70 than I am 60. And the person you infect and kill could be your associate dean for academic affairs, and I'm not ready to leave you guys. So really stay healthy. I really want you to take care of yourself.
Thank you, Jan. Do we have any updates from the GPCI, Alexa?
Jan, I love you.
Oh, Alexa.
What was I going to say? The GPCI finished comment on Sunday night, last night, I guess it was. And I'll be sending all of the chairs the comments I received. And then hopefully we will vote on the actual document at our next meeting.
Thank you, Alexa. The UA. Jeff, do you have any updates from the UA?
Just a quick one. So the UA still plans to meet virtually for the last three meetings. So the next one is tomorrow, where we're going to be getting an update from the judicial administrator and the ombudsman. And then we're also going to be talking about stuff moving forward, like the campus code of conduct. But let me know if you have any questions.
Thank you very much. So now we can, if there's anything else that anyone has any questions, but I would like to give Wendy the floor, because she can tell us a little bit more about a resolution discussion prior to meeting. So Wendy, did you have an update on that?
Hi everyone, I do. So on the Office of the Assembly's website, for each resolution, if you click on a particular resolution, it'll give you information about the abstract, the resolution history. There is an option for us to have comments. So if the resolution right now is tabled indefinitely, or you're looking, you know, like the snow day, or you know, the inclement weather one, or the circulator, or even the GPCI. Well, the GPCI is something different because there isn't, you know, getting involved, but with this, at least there is that option. So, I mean, that would be something that, you know, Andy and Gina and myself could discuss and get that set up. But we have a little bit of time before your next meeting, because spring break is in there. So the next meeting is coming up on April 6th. So, you know, I would think we could definitely have something in place by then, but I did want to let you guys all know that there is an option to have the comments open so that people could, you know, put their comments there. And then also, I know Anthony had said, let it, you know, make sure everyone has that there. So it just would be, you know, you could probably copy and paste the comments into a document and have that be part of the meeting packet for that particular meeting. And also, I wanted a second everyone else's, or third or 10th or whatever options of social distance and stay healthy and stay safe. Myself, I'm not in that demographic, but I'm pushing 50. My dad, however, is 80. And so I've had to change a few things. I was actually supposed to go to New York City this weekend, and that completely got blown out of the water. So please, please, please wash your hands, stay away. Much love to you all. But yeah, we got to get all through this together and look out for those who are in more vulnerable states.
Thank you, Wendy. And yes, I'd just like to acknowledge Jan's comment in the chat. So do take care of yourselves and one another. Take extra precautions. So yes. Jeff, did you have an update about TEK yet?
Yeah, so there was an announcement that came about 30 minutes ago. TCAT is announcing that they're reducing service in the near future, especially for late night. So I would check, for those of you who use TCAT regularly, I would check their website for any updates on when buses will come, because they will be altered with everything going on.
Thank you very much, Jeff. So that concludes our committee Q&A, and the next part of our meeting is adjournment. So Alexa, do you want a motion to?
A motion to adjourn today's meeting.
Okay, there's been a motion to adjourn the meeting. Can I get someone to second that by raising your hand?
Joa and Cody.
Okay, there's been seconds. So is there any dissent? Okay, I don't see none. Alexa, can you confirm?
I don't see any.
Okay, so the meeting is adjourned. Thank you guys. Thank you for your patience. You guys are great. Take care, be safe, and stay healthy.
This has been a production of Cornell University, on the web at cornell.edu.